During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
The show that takes you home. The Home Stretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Home Stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. No Facebook Live, because frankly, Jed and I...
I love Jed. I consider Jed a friend. I had no idea that Jed was out here paying $35 for a beard trim. I had no idea that Jed's girlfriend could trim his beard for him. That is a very intimate exchange. I've never let anyone other than occasionally the barber, you know, kind of line up my beard situation for me. I just have a lot of questions. This is great. This show's going to be great today.
He is a fancy fella, and believe it or not, I have never once, not a one time, got a professional
ever shaved.
Well, I mean, yeah. So that also goes to the point of I've never got it professionally done. You know when people go and get their beards lined up or their mustaches trimmed?
Yeah.
My beard, not good enough. It looks like someone grabbed a Sharpie and decided to throw a few lines on there.
Stash, like you fell asleep first at a party.
Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like, and stash is thick. And so no one's touching the stash.
You can't risk that.
You know, I can't risk it. I just can't do it. I'm not going to lie, though. I really need to trim it because eating soup has become dangerous. Drinking beer means I'm saving some for later. And I had barbecue today. It might still be there. If you see any burnt-in fragments strewn about the stash, I'm saving for later.
All right, so all the good vibes that I got from what Jed said got ruined by everything you said. So it does feel like it at least is the home stretch. The person behind the glass makes me want to stay, and the person behind the host mic makes me want to go do anything else for the next 58 minutes, 57 minutes.
You know what, Briscoe? It's been a month, and this is how you treat me? We might just skip this or that just to spite you.
No, I was going to ask if we could do a whole hour of this or that. No, look, man, this is a good way to round out the week. No AES tonight because of the finals game, but... A little time to be on the show that takes you home, as a wise man once said. It's always good. I'm just can't stop thinking about Jed getting his beard trimmed with his girlfriend's dog trimmers. I just think that's awesome. I'll tell you what. Here's the olive branch. I'll reach back, Jed. And this is the circle of life. I have used my beard trimmers on the dog.
Oh, okay. See, so yeah, it really did go full circle. But imagine this, Josh. So my girlfriend lives in KCK, not really like KCK. She lives on the, like, kind of near Joe's, but like literally a stone's throw from Johnson County. So imagine a shirtless Jed Marshall having his beard trimmed by his girlfriend on her front porch.
I would pay for that.
Driving past that. That's a KCK moment right
you
there.
You pay money for that.
I did think
yeah,
it was
on
strange.
My OnlyFans.
On your OnlyFans, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I did think it was weird that she insisted that because she was using the dog trimmers that you also be on a collar and leash. But if that's what you guys do, like that's what you guys do. I don't want to yuck anybody else's yum.
That's extra.
I have not. I can't add anything to that.
Does Orlando Brown sign a long-term contract in KC, Briscoe?
That's a this or that question, right? Is that you want to start today? I'll get into serious sports mode whenever. There've just been some really like truly excellent, just tickling visuals in the show today, which really I feel like is just what the home stretch brings.
Speaking of tickling, someone said that my mustache was goose. They tried to be in a derogatory move. They came up to me and were like, "Yo, goose, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Thank you." Thank you.
I think I said I was harassing you and Matt Connor and Seth Kaiser a while back on the Arrowhead Addict podcast.
You were hazing
us. That's a plug for you, by the way.
Thank you.
I said a plug for your other show. And I think I said something along the lines of just, man, it's really sweet to see a podcast with my good friends Matt Connor, Seth Kaiser, and Goose from Top Gun. So, I mean, it is what it is, but also it's very in right now. Like, you are riding that Top Gun wave. I believe there are some prominent mustaches still in the new Top Gun, particularly, I almost said Miles Bridges, but that's not right. Miles Teller.
Miles Bridges in Top Gun would be a very good turn of events.
It really would. But no, look, man, I think you rock it. I just think don't like are, if you're getting stuff in it on a regular basis, I think you're doing it wrong. You know, I'm rocking the full beard most of the time, but that includes, you know, full mustache territory being filled there. And I've got some unsweetened iced tea with a straw right now because I'm not trying to have my mustache be too moist on a nice spring summer day. But I feel like getting burnt in, like entire chunks of burnt in stuck in it might be a you problem.
I'm trying to give Andy Reid a run for his money. Maybe this is my Halloween costume. I just eat a whole bunch of donuts and tacos and just really go all out for it. I think I could do it.
Somebody who loves donuts, tacos, and having a mustache. I think that's a great idea.
I mean, I'm sure my girlfriend would love that, right? Just me.
Yeah.
Normally sitting at 170, all of a sudden just ballooning up. I could play left tackle instead of Orlando Brown if they want to save some money.
You're 170?
Yeah, I'm 170. What do you think I am?
I had not really put a number to it. I didn't really give it much thought. But 170 is like an amount of weight that I can move pretty easily in a number of forms and fashions. So just I'm realizing now that if I needed to like throw you off the balcony at 8'10", I probably could pretty easily.
You'd have to be able to get the door open.
Yeah, Judd's struggling. There's no door over here for smoke breaks. It's difficult. That room back there, the one he's in, basically just one big smoke shop now.
I think that's fine. I think that, look, I mean, I'm not going to encourage people to start smoking, right? We all know. Everybody knows.
But you look cool.
Well, here's the thing in addition to that. It's also, like, the heyday of sports talk radio, I think, came with clouds of cigarette smoke. Like, I think that the idea, if you said something about how, listen here, see, this Orlando Brown fellow, I don't care that he's hired an agent with no NFL experience. Then you just puff on a big stogie for a little bit, and then you go, you know, 913-3810-810. I think that's the aesthetic that we're missing right now.
And
especially if you get Facebook Live up and going again.
Well, and I'm just here with my medium / large black coffee, so, you know. That's basically radio is.
Black coffee
and Hawaiian
and
shirts.
Stash.
You know what, Briscoe? We missed our calling. We're here in 2022 doing this. We would have thrived in 1970 when Led Zeppelin was coming out and getting over the airwaves.
No, you're so close to being right, Sterling. You are 95% of the way there. Let me help you. We are born at the exact right time. Because we are here not just for that resurgence of all of these things, maybe or maybe not including, you know, excessive smoking. We are not just here for the resurgence of all of these things. We are here to usher that in. This show right now, between the three of us, our facial hair capacities, our potential Hawaiian shirt capacity, our potential smoke capacity.
Tube socks, too. We love tube socks.
I've got some tie-dye shorts on right now.
Wow.
And a gray tank top. I could swap this tank top out for something else a little more 70s, 80s, really. I can work on that, maybe get myself some leg warmers. But I think this show is about to help usher in a new era. I think we were born exactly when we were supposed to be. Also, if I would have been born much sooner, diabetes would have killed me.
The sugars, Briscoe. Get it right.
The sugars.
It's called
my unsweetened
the sugars.
Sweet tea.
What do the Chiefs do with Orlando Brown? Because after hearing his comments, I'm not going to lie, it kind of irritated me. It really irked me. And I'm sitting here going, you know what? Screw it. I want him to walk. I don't want him here anymore. Then the other part of me, the rational part of me goes, okay, but now who's going to play left tackle? He has a good point.
Yeah, what part? Yeah, are you saying that the part of like they don't want to have a backup left tackle because the pass rushers in this division got even better this offseason?
I don't disagree with what he said necessarily. It's the way he said it, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't disagree with the fact that, yeah, you don't want to have a backup left tackle when every single team in the AFC West got so much better, especially at edge, right? So you don't want to have, I don't care who it is, even Joe Tooney to an extent. You don't want him moving from left guard to left tackle because he's not a traditional left tackle. I understand what Orlando Brown said. Just to me, I think he may have gone about it the wrong way. The way he answered it was very, very cocky for a guy who was merely good, not great, not elite. And he's a guy who obviously wants to get paid like he's a top three left tackle according to a lot of different reports. I just feel like there's a lot of disconnect here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give me a chance to kind of go through a few steps of this. But one, Everything he said is correct. Like, that is where you have to begin. Like,
sure.
I think there's no arguing what he said there. If you want to talk about the tone or that he said it, I get it, right? I understand that maybe in your ideal world, your employee and contract negotiations, you'd like him to, you know, just try to keep a low profile or whatever. But also, he is in negotiations right now. And I think part of that sort of idea of, oh, you shouldn't say stuff like this publicly when, you know, everyone with the Chiefs is going to be asked about it publicly for the next month or two, or month or and change, because they only have about a month before that extension comes around. But before the deadline, that is. But if you go through that whole process, I think at some point we're just not used to hearing players be honest about it. And given the choice between the two, I would rather have Orlando Brown tell me the truth of what he believes and why he thinks the negotiations will work out rather than go on NFL Network and lie about it. Like, we just get players to lie for no reason all the time. I think in large part because you tell the truth and then you get a big negative reaction about, wait a second, hey, what you said was true, but why did you say the truth on television? It's like, well, I don't know, man. I mean, what do we want from our athletes? So it didn't bother me one bit. Like, we were the AES came on right after that audio came out. And so when we talked about it, I don't even think that particular part of it was a conversation topic, because I find it kind of refreshing, even whenever the truth is sort of unpleasant from the team perspective. I still just sort of find the truth refreshing in that regard.
I appreciate the truth. And again, I don't disagree with what he said. My point here is, I feel like he views himself as this elite tackle, this guy who deserves all of this money, who wants to get paid like a top three tackle. When, again, my thought process here of Orlando Brown, the way you want to look at it, if it's PFF, if it's the eye test, he's merely good, right? He is good. He's not great. He's not elite. Where do you slide him in if you want to name all the left tackles in the NFL? Where does he slide in? Eight? Maybe? Maybe eight? Anywhere from 8 to 12?
Yeah, he's also, but I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think top 10, but probably not top 4 or 5, you know, somewhere in that
definitely
range
not
right
top
now.
4 or 5.
But here's the other thing though. He's 26 years old. He has played 1.5 seasons at left tackle. And if you want to say who anointed you king of the new class of left tackles, the Chiefs did. They did this last offseason. They paid a price that you would pay for a tackle who is not literally a surefire Hall of Famer. So he's not literally Trent Williams right now, who's, you know, a half a decade older. Actually, closer to a decade older, I believe. I'll double-check that, too. But you pay that premium for a young, still ascending tackle prospect, if you even want to say. You can decide if you want to use that word or not. I mean, obviously, he's been very good at the NFL level for a while. But, I mean, there is still projection to be done, but the Chiefs did that whenever they traded for him. So, look, I don't think it's an absolute guaranteed lock that he gets this extension done. And that is something that my opinion on has changed, maybe over just the last couple of weeks, where it really does seem like there might be some tension there, and maybe both sides are ready to put their foot down somewhere with a little bit of space between the two of them. I think there is a chance that this does not end up 100% as a lock for a long-term extension, but I think that would be a terrible look for the Chiefs to trade all the assets they did for him last offseason and then get to this point and to sort of seem caught off guard by what he's asking for. But I don't think it'd be a great look for Orlando Brown to basically ask out of one location, get traded to the next, and then wait to become a free agent to try to do it again with the third team that early. I don't think that'd be a great look either.
But wouldn't you say at some point it's a sunk cost? It's the same thing with Clyde Edwards-Helaire being drafted in the first round. I know you and I, we always like to joke around and go back and forth on it and say, well, that's why you didn't draft a running back in the first round. But it didn't.
Sure.
It's a sunk cost. At this point, he is on the roster. He is who he is. And you have to find a way to utilize him in his best attributes, right? Same thing with Mecole Hardman. Last year, they finally figured out a way to use him in his best role, whether that's getting him screen passes instead of saying, you know what, try and act like Tyreek Hill. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not DK Metcalf. He is who he is, okay? Who cares if he was drafted before DK Metcalf? That's not the way he is going to be used. So with Orlando Brown, yeah, they give those assets. There's no reason to double down on a bad decision if you want to declare it a bad decision. I'm not saying it's a bad decision, but if that's the way you want to look at it, just because you traded those assets for him, does not now mean you have to give him top-tier left tackle money. That, to me, could double down and extrapolate on a bad decision.
I think that that conversation completely hinges on what perspective you're looking at it from. Mm-hmm. Because if you were to say, hey, you know, this is obviously not going to happen for a whole variety of reasons. But let's say tomorrow, Andy Reid, Brett Veach, and every assistant coach is all fired. They're all, they clean the whole thing from Clark Hunt on down. And I am hired as the new general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Dislike.
No, me too. Me too. But I would say I would make a bad one-man scouting department. I would say, in that situation, hey, do you need to take into account what you gave up for Orlando Brown last offseason as the new GM who's inheriting that contract, that trade, that decision from the previous administration? I would say no. At that point, that's not really your responsibility, and you know, unless you're the owner of the team and you're saying, hey, I really do want to make sure that we are appropriately valuing our assets here. But if you are Brett Veach, or if you're talking about it of this current Chiefs administration, and you say, hey, well, wouldn't it be a sunk cost? Yeah, but you sunk your own cost there, right? Like, again, going back, it's the Clyde thing in a very different form. And again, sure. Orlando Brown is significantly more valuable than Clyde.
100%, yes.
By a lot. But I think that if you get into that space, is hey, we gave up all of this for him, a good reason to pay him an extra $5 million per year than you would like to be paying him? No, that would not be good logic to say, well, we spent the assets, we overpaid here as well. They spent the assets and overpaid for Frank Clark, right? Yeah. Like that was two bad decisions compounding. But what I think would be the bad look of it all would be to make that move for Brown and then a year later go, oh, actually, we didn't think that this was going to play out this way, when you've got to do a lot of those sort of predictive calculations before you make that trade.
When it comes to Orlando Brown and his potential, because this is where I am with this. We talked to Seth Kaiser actually on Arrowhead Addict. You were the one hazing us prior to that. I think you may have left before we got to this part of the conversation. I asked Seth, basically, where is Orlando Brown's potential? Because while he is obviously a massive human being, he is obviously very good. I'm not saying he's a detriment at left tackle by any means. He is going to get better because he's young, and we can say he could get some more of the technical side of playing tackle, but he doesn't have quick feet, right? There's always going to be some limitations to Orlando Brown's game, and does that make you nervous? And Seth basically said, yeah, I don't know if he's ever going to be some elite tackle because he does have some of those limitations. So when we sit here and talk about potential, what does that look like to you? Where do you think Orlando Brown ends up? Because to me, I feel like he might be better because he gets the, you know, he's been in the NFL, he's a wily veteran type of situation. But also, if you don't have great feet, it's tough to really just all of a sudden become that elite left tackle.
Yeah, no, and so I think what it is a conversation we get caught up in at a lot of positions. And I think at quarterback, this is the place where that conversation means the most, where you're talking about the gap between 100% or your number one player at the position versus 50%, or not even 50 is way too low, 80% or 90%, and what that means for the 10th or 5th best player at that position. And so, yeah, I think that it's totally reasonable to look at that and say, yeah, I don't know how high Orlando Brown Jr.'s ceiling will ultimately go or how far he'll be able to develop with the traits that he has. But also, like, he has power at that position that not many other tackles in the league have. Very, very few, in fact. So I think that ends up being a measure of, yeah, no, maybe he won't be Trent Williams at age 32 or whatever. But what is he going to be? Can he be productive? Eric Fisher and even Mitchell Schwartz is sort of he might actually be 1-1 at his position. But Eric Fisher was never the best tackle in football and was always good enough at left tackle and was never really overpaid at left tackle, I would argue, for the Chiefs. So I just think that conversation has to happen in degrees.
I'm with you. I also come down to what team gives him that much money, right? I know Orlando Brown wants this much money, and if you take all things into consideration, it almost feels like the Chiefs need to, because again, what he said was not wrong. Everyone in the AFC West got so much better. They have all these edge pieces. You don't want a backup tackle there, but what would you do? What's the final number? You say, you know what? Screw it. No, we're not going to pay you $25 million a year. Do you have a final number in mind where you're like, if the Chiefs said, you know what? This is our final out. I agree.
It's tough because I've got like the SpotTrack page up for top tackle contracts. And so the truth of this part is it depends on what metric you're looking at. So if I can try to like piecemeal this together, you know, like the total value of Trent Williams's deal that he'd signed last offseason is $138 million total, and that's a ton of money. And it's $23 million average annual value, which is the highest in football. And about 55 of that is practically guaranteed by that metric from SpotTrack. But practical guarantees for Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore or David Bakhtiari or Ryan Ramczyk in New Orleans all have more practical guaranteed money in their deal. They're all younger than Trent Williams is as well. So I think that Ronnie Stanley number is sort of interesting. He's 26. He's in Baltimore. Baltimore chose him over Brown, basically, and that's 5 years for a little under $20 million annually, 64 guaranteed at signing, and the most guaranteed at signing in football right now at the position. So I would say that what I would love to try to keep that average annual value down, and then you're probably going to have to guarantee a ton of it for mm-hmm. Brown. But at some level, I'm still kind of comfortable with that, I think, where you that's the price to pay. So I would love to see that yearly number not eclipse $20 million if you could get yourself there.
Sure.
But maybe you guarantee more than you did than Laremy Tunsil got, right?
Yeah.
He's at 22 a year though, and $50 million of it practically guaranteed, 40 of it guaranteed at signing. So again, the truth is I do not have a simple answer for you there.
Yeah.
But if he could be kind of in that class of not totally resetting the market, can't be the highest paid tackle in football, but if he could be 3 or 4 by the end of his deal, he'd be 7 or 8 and probably a pretty good value, because that's how the NFL market tends to work.
Yeah, it's a very difficult decision to make, and one that whatever happens, half the fan base is going to be thrilled and half the fan base is going to be pissed. It's a lose-lose situation, right? I take it back. If they sign Orlando Brown Jr. to a 5-year, $60 million contract, everyone's thrilled. Everyone's stoked, sure, except for Orlando Brown.
right.
Like,
right.
But I just don't see that happening. Based on what we've heard from Brown, based on what we've heard from the Chiefs, based on the situation in the AFC West, it's just, you know what? Like you mentioned it, it's a good thing you and I are not a GM.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, any contract you get to, you'd love to say, hey, we're all happy about this, but in reality, both sides are probably a little pissed about something not going the way they wanted it to. So I'm sure there's some truth in that. But also, again, yeah, like, I don't know if somebody listening right now is saying, oh, I'd give them 20 annually on average. Again, we're just assuming some
sure.
normal guarantees. I'd give them 20, but I wouldn't give them 22. Okay, well, what is that $2 million going to buy you if Patrick Mahomes' blind side is being protected by Jerron Christian this year? Or Prince Tegu-Wanogho is the number one backup at left tackle again? Yeah. Or you are moving Joe Tooney over there, which I do actually think is kind of interesting. It would make his contract a little less of a behemoth.
Sure.
But if that was the plan, they would have done that differently from the jump, I think. So,
correct.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the entire structure of this offensive line is fascinating, and I think it would be wild if they said, yes, we've invested everywhere except for at the single most important position for Patrick Mahomes' blind side. I think both sides have to be pretty motivated to get a deal done.
Yeah. End of the day, though, I'm still excited with the overhaul of the offensive line. The three on the interior look absolutely incredible. I like the draft capital they spent there at right tackle. I'm still holding out hope for Lucas Niang. Lucas Niang is my Alberto Mondesi. Okay, I understand the majority of the fan base is like, you know what, we got to move on. It's injuries. We can't just sink hope here. And I'm just sitting here like, no, guys, I'm going to die on this hill. It's a weird hill to die on, but I'm going to do it.
Well, here's the thing. What is Lucas Niang costing you right now? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. If he starts the year on the pup list and then halfway, you know, week 8, he's back or something, do you know what's probably going to have happened by week 8? One of those 5 starters is hurt now, because that's just how football happens. And if he gives you some flexibility at guard, fantastic. If Wiley is the guy who gets hurt at right tackle, then you can pick between Niang and Kennard on that right side. Or if it's Kennard starting and he gets hurt. You know, like, the Chiefs have a ton of flexibility and depth across the O-line, which is everywhere really except for left tackle. And this year is in a better spot than last year at this time.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I do want to talk some NBA with you. I do want to talk some Royals. Obviously got to save some time for this or that. Josh Briscoe, almost entirely Sports, joining us right here on the home stretch.
ESPN Kansas City is KCTE Independence and K233 DM Raytown, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM.
And no, it's difficult. Jed and I don't know how to do it, and Rudy's in New York, and Beards is not here, so That's what we get. And Josh Briscoe is still joining us. Briscoe, I'm telling you right now, should we just call up Rudy and tell him to fly back here? Good answer, Briscoe. Good answer. Did we lose him?
I don't believe we lost him. Josh did say when we were coming back from break, how long do I have? And I said 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
So you think that he's not good with time?
I'm back.
Yeah, it sounds like you weren't good with time there. I thought we lost you, but now we found you. I like playing hide and seek while being on air. It's a good game.
Jed, I could make Sterling feel so bad right now.
Do it.
No, don't do it. You can do it. I don't care. Is he not?
I don't know. I mean, it would really ruin the vibe of this segment if I did.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I don't feel like you really would. Now you have to.
That's true. I don't want to. Well, honestly, no, I probably shouldn't because I don't. Yeah, no, I can't. I'll tell you next week, dear listeners, and I'll tell Sterling later.
But no, I want you to do it now.
No,
this is not happening.
I don't know what's happening, and
it's a Friday. Come on.
Frankly, I dislike everything that's happened since we came back from break.
I had a neighbor that was at my door, who had mowed today earlier. We had some mower issues, and he was trying to come up with a plan for the rest of the week. And I was trying to tell him that I was, you know, I'm busy right now, I need to get back, but we're trying to hash all that out. You know, and it's just been really hectic since my grandma died this morning.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry, Briscoe, man.
Wow, that wasn't as good. I'm very sorry, also, Josh.
Briscoe, I'm really sorry to hear that, man.
You feel bad yet, Sterling?
Yeah, I feel horrible. Now I feel like an ass.
I told you I didn't want to do it. I told you I didn't want to do it. I didn't even I told you I didn't want to do it.
In your defense, Josh, I didn't realize that's where you were going. I know that when we were texting, I knew that your grandma was obviously in bad shape and stuff like that. But
I feel bad for pushing.
Yeah.
No, I will tell you
I'm
this.
I'm the AH right here now.
Yeah, thanks, Jed.
Well,
not Sterling's fault. No, hold on, Jed. Jed?
Yes.
It's Sterling's fault.
Oh, yeah.
I disagree on that.
Absolutely.
No, it's all right.
We'll edit this out of the podcast.
This is all in the podcast. She herself would have thought that this bit was hilarious. So I feel okay about that.
Mm. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, you're not.
I am sorry to hear that, Briscoe. Who do you think I am? Just some stone, heartless B-word? I feel like I'm a pretty good dude.
To at least try and bring the levity back to the situation and get us more back on track of the way
Anything.
The show that normally goes. I'm the stoned one out of the three of us, so let's just go back from there and talk about the Chiefs.
Speaking of stones, let's throw some stones. Let's talk about the Royals. Dayton Moore.
I would honestly rather talk about the death in my family.
Oh, man. Okay.
Bazinga!
How long does Dayton Moore have left? Is he on the hot seat? Because it feels
That's a really hurtful way of phrasing that, man.
Hot seat?
No, how long does he have left?
Okay. Dayton Moore will... Now I don't know what to say, Briscoe. You have me tongue-tied over here.
Do I need to make another weed joke,
Make
Briscoe?
Another weed joke. How many weed jokes did Jed make to bring this back on track?
All of them.
Look, man, I just thought Jed would appreciate the fact that I was blunt.
Wow. That's well done. I can't even top that one. That's top-notch.
Thank you.
I look forward to it.
What do you want to know, Sterling?
Well, do you think it's a joint effort between J.J. Pecola and Dayton Moore, or is this just all on one dude? Like, that was bad. My main question here is...
I think it was fine.
I think J.J. Pecola might not be the main issue here. I almost want J.J. Pecola to take over, and he was on the other day on the program, and I appreciate him taking time out to do stuff like this, especially when things are not going well. I know that's no fun to have to answer questions when your team is two scoops of ass, so you appreciate that. But at some point, I don't necessarily blame him. He's not been in quote-unquote control long enough. Obviously, it seemed like it was his decision on Terry Bradshaw. But I do feel like Dayton Moore, while he still has that 51%, it's time for him to move out. Because at this point, Moore is tarnishing his pedigree from what he did here.
Yeah, I mean, this is obvious, I guess. But, like, his whole, like, the reason he wrote a book and people bought it is because they won the World Series. Like, if they even would have just lost it in back-to-back years, he would not have the, to go back to the first segment, the leash, I guess, that a lot of fans have been willing to extend him. And again, like, look, they did get there. It just wasn't in a way that has seemed any sort of repeatable. And so I don't know that that's a great reason to continue to have someone in power in your organization. Yeah, I don't know anybody that thinks it's like a JJ Piccolo problem. I don't think that that's much of a thought process for anybody, really. But I also don't know that. I mean, I think that whenever you end up at this point, I think if they're going to make a move, it's you got a clean house. I mean, maybe you find a couple of elements here or there. Maybe it's JJ, and maybe it's maybe there's a few guys from the staff, and certainly on the minors and their scouting department and stuff that can certainly change. But I just think it would be really tough to try to piecemeal this. Like, I don't think that Mike Matheny is the problem, but he's also clearly not the solution.
Sure.
I don't think Dayton Moore is a horrible person who is horrible at building baseball teams. I just don't know how long you can watch your team lose without looking at the top and saying, is this the only way that this can be? Do we have a different way that we could exist as a franchise? And ultimately, this is where we're left now, watching some truly horrendous baseball, and it's also that it's gotten worse since last year.
Yeah,
like, last year at least ended with some positivity. Now, by that point in the season, not that many people paying attention because we had football around the corner, and so that, you know, the Royals missed their window to make us optimistic. And at the end of this year, they're probably not going to lose 110 games, and so they'll
probably 111. You know,
they'll right, they'll be bad, but they'll pull something together, and they won't look as bad at the end of the year, and we'll all go, oh well, yeah, they were in the draft lottery and they got the third pick. Cool. What a fun time. There is so much apathy around this team right now. It feels like that. I just don't know. I don't know how John Sherman can look at his product and say, yeah, this is fine. Let's just keep running this back.
Yeah. And this is where I'm at here is when you look at guys who would never make the roster here and who are having success elsewhere, that's what makes it so frustrating. I'm not talking about Jake Junis. I'm talking about guys like Yordan Alvarez because he's not toolsy enough. He's not athletic enough. Oh, yeah, but he just bleeping rakes, right? No, he's not a middle infielder with speed. He's not Nicky Lopez. And look at Nicky Lopez back to being Chris Getz. You know what? That's at this point, being disrespectful to Chris Getz.
Don't you?
You know? That's what I'm sorry. It's Chris Getz with a good eye.
I will leave mid segment this time.
No, dude's batting what 217, on base percentage under 300, no slugging. Like, my point here is Dayton Moore should know more than us. We saw this construction. We go, okay, there could be some pieces here, but Dayton Moore was the one that had a lot of faith in Mondesi either A, staying healthy or being a big part, because if that's not the case, they would not have had him as the starting shortstop. They would have had Bobby Witt Jr. starting shortstop start the season.
This is wild, because I didn't think I was going to come on and defend Dayton Moore at any point for the remainder of the year, but I don't think that's true.
Bobby Witt Jr. would have started at shortstop then if that was the case.
Why? What did he lose by having Mondesi start there? 15 games? 10? It's fine. You start the season with your best lineup when it's healthy, and then whenever Mondesi inevitably was going to get hurt, then you can have Bobby Witt Jr. there, and now he's playing out the rest of the season at short. I don't that doesn't give me any pause. That's not a part of the equation for me.
Having Carlos Santana and Ryan O'Hearn be your first base options is a poorly constructed position. I mean, first base, seriously, that's the best you can do? Yeah, Frank Schwindel couldn't swing it here, so let's get Ryan O'Hearn and give a large contract to Carlos Santana.
No, it's on that criticism.
Yeah,
that
the majority of this is so frustrating because this is why I want to move him from Dayton Moore. It's not necessarily just everything he's done. And, of course, we appreciate the World Series. All that stuff's great. But I'm tired of this guy has to be athletic. He has to be toolsy. He has to have speed because that's not the way a lot of rosters in the current MLB is being constructed, right? That's just the way it is. And I understand in a small market you try and find, you want to be different, you want to be creative, like the way they won the World Series with the bullpen pieces. Now that everyone does that, right? This is different. You got to evolve. You have to adapt. Look at what the Rays are doing, and I'm so frustrated that I have to keep going back to the Tampa Bay Rays, but it's because it's true. When was the last time the Royals got a guy like Shane McClanahan? Same draft as all of those other guys in that 2018 draft with Brady Singer. I think McClanahan was drafted 31st overall. Like, when was the last time the Royals got their McClanahan? Zach Greinke? And Zach Greinke took 4 years, and that was in, what, 2003?
Well, and also to your point about, hey, if you're a small market, you want to find the market inefficiencies, right? In fact, you almost have to. That's true. But you can't just always try to go to the same market inefficiency, because eventually the market adjusts to that and it's no longer inefficient for everybody else. So right now, trying to build yourself a baseball team that only really needs to worry about 7 innings before 3 robots take over, or really 6 innings before 3 robots take over in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, you can't do that on the cheap anymore. You can't just go find a sort of failed reliever and then find out that he's a literal walking cyborg. That is hard to replicate. So if you can't keep replicating it in a certain way, you have to figure out ways to evolve and find other ways of beating the system, if you will. And not only have the Royals not done that since the World Series, and it's been longer than you might think if you really go back and think about it, but not only have they not done that, I don't think we've seen proper development from the ways from the guys they have invested in to say, hey, maybe the market inefficiency was college pitchers. Maybe they all decided, hey, the best way for us to set up our future is to spend a bunch of draft picks on a bunch of college pitchers, and we're going to hope that 3 of them end up in our rotation. One of them ends up in the pen, and you just take what you get from the rest. Say, hey, we get that out of this draft class. They're closer to pro ready. We can speed up the system. But right now, it feels more like David Beatty getting a bunch of JUCO guys in, you know, like yeah. to try to get that a little more pro ready right now. It's like, well, that's not. It just hasn't developed that way. So if that was their gamble on an evolution of that system, at least that is a different choice they made. But then every time your pitchers end up back at the pro level for 3 games, they forget what they learned in the minor leagues, and you have no choice in that world, I don't think, than to fire your pitching coach. And the Royals have proven they do have another choice, which is to keep their pitching coach forever.
I don't understand. It was like Bob Sutton, right? It was like everyone knows Bob Sutton needs to go, but somehow
worse than Bob Sutton. Correct. How about this? Here's my flaming hot fire take. Worse than Bob Sutton, not just for the length of time, but for the bleeping obviousness of where the issue is. Bob Sutton dropping Justin Houston into coverage is ultimately linebackers drop into coverage sometimes, right? Like that's a thing that they at least do, but we still remember that because it seemed like absolute malpractice.
Sure.
It was. Bob Sutton should have been fired a year before he was. Cal Eldridge should have been fired 2 years before he might ultimately be.
Dave Island should not have been let go if you want to go there.
Arguably, sure. And but the reason that it's so obvious with Cal, and again, man, I don't know that dude. I know he and Matheny are close and whatever. Man, I don't wish any ill will on Cal Eldridge, the human being.
Agreed.
But bleep, man, you look at this roster that might have been built, and it really has been built. I mean, you can argue with what led you from point A to point B, but a roster built to succeed with young pitchers coming out of college, getting to the majors quickly, and then trying to build a rotation that way. When every one of those dudes stinks at one point or the other, maybe try a different person to hone their skills. Could you believe in them enough over the evaluation process to invest in them as heavily as you did? And then so they get here and they're either inconsistent or straight up just dookie, two scoops of it, some would say. Now all of a sudden, here we are. Here we are looking around going, oh, no, these pitchers, something's not right, but no one should be fired. Are you sure? Because somebody should.
You know what's asinine to me? And maybe this is just a wild
thought. 2 scoops of asinine.
That was good. You know how all these guys are having success in the minors? I understand it's the minor leagues, and they always say, it feels like every single year they always say, the difference between AAA and in Major League Baseball has never been wider. They say that every single year, right? But this year especially, right? Why not move the guys up who are having success with those pitchers up as well? Is that just a crazy thought? The pitching coach,
no, they
who's
just,
in the minor
they
leagues,
just did that. They just did that with the hitting squad.
Sure, and guess what?
They just did that.
David Lesky said he's already noticed improvement.
Yeah, they just did it.
Why not do it with the pitching side? Like, I've been screaming this from the get-go because I said, here's something different. Here's what feels like a Rays type of move, right? This is something the Rays would do. They would find someone who works well with a lot of guys and say, let's move him up, let's promote him, let's keep him, let's move him up with these young guys to make sure they're successful. Why not do it in this system? If you know Cal's not your guy, but you see Jackson Kohar, Brady Singer, all these dudes absolutely dealing and finding the message get through to them in the minor league level, again, they're not going to have a .86 ERA in the majors. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if the message is getting through to them and they trust whoever the AAA pitching coach is or the AA guy, move them up with them. I just don't understand how they're so hard-headed.
I think that the only argument against that is some amount of distrust of perhaps that group of guys, which is not a good reason to continue to employ someone at the professional level who has had just no results. Because again, like, look, I really try to be careful about this coach stinks because the result is bad. Sometimes you get good coaches with bad teams and you can only do so much. Sometimes you get really talented teams with bad coaches and they look great. We are horrible at evaluating coaching in general in media, I would say, because it's really hard to figure out where that actually is making an impact. But man, if you invest heavily in this resource and then it's not good and it's you that much, the result is blindingly obvious. There was either an issue in the talent evaluation process or in the talent development process or in the current talent management process. I would argue there's a really good chance that's in several of those spots, but it is the easiest thing to do with baseball is to fire your pitching coach and your hitting coach. Because like you said, if you're talking about getting through to those guys, maybe Cal Eldred in the right bullpen or whatever, maybe he's a savant, just absolutely teaching great stuff to veterans who have heard it before. But for whatever reason, a bunch of younger pitchers, again, who did pitch in college, they've had some, you know, reasonable, most of them, I think, SEC training.
SEC, baby. It just means more.
It just means more. Even in baseball, it just means more. If those guys aren't getting whatever genius that Cal Eldred might be spitting out to them, you need to find somebody who can try to actually make a connection there. I would agree with that, and I think that connection to the Omaha developments seems like a legitimate thing.
Let's move on from ranting, and let's talk a little bit of NBA so we can get happy before this or that. Golden State Warriors down 1-2 to the Boston Celtics. Celtics at home. No game has really been fun. I'm not going to lie. For a team that that seem, at least to me, so evenly matched, because I like to say, you know, Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, there's your superstars. You got Jaylen Brown, who's number three. The way Klay Thompson's played, he's been number four. Then you have a whole bunch of really solid role players. I mean, Andrew Wiggins at times has taken over. You've seen Derek White go on stretches where he looks incredible. Al Horford, right? Al Horford all of a sudden looks like he's 26 and he's playing against Joel Embiid because he's a Joel Embiid stopper. Like, but there's not been a close game. Do you think tonight's different?
I mean, I want it to be, but I don't know why I would, you know, I don't know why I'd tell you this one's going to be any different there. Because ultimately I look around and I see the Warriors absolutely eating the entire world for breakfast in the third quarter. And then, like you said, you get these series, and this has been true through so much of the NBA playoffs. You get these series where they go six or seven games, but it feels like every game is, if not a full-on blowout, kind of held at arm's length, you know?
Yeah.
Where you have a pretty good idea, and this was especially true for Suns Mavericks, right? Like, that series went seven, and I don't know that any of those games were terribly exciting all down at the wire. So it's a very weird, I don't know, I don't have the first idea of how to explain it. If you want to do some of the role players at home stuff, but it hasn't even just been that. Like, oh, hitting shots versus not hitting shots. You can see some things defensively, like where the Celtics continue to try to drop on Steph, which is not how I would do it. But ultimately, I don't know that it's going to matter because to that point, I think you just keep picking home teams until you get it wrong. And tonight, if Boston wins, obviously, I mean, they're 3-1. Is not an impossible hill to climb, but it's a hefty one.
Golden State knows all about that.
They do. That is true. But I think this is more or less a must win for Golden State tonight.
No, don't you say that.
I said more or less. That's
no, come
on. Right?
Don't do. They're going to give 110% too.
I mean, fair from a cliche standpoint.
Do they have a chip on their shoulder?
I think that they've got that championship pedigree, and that's really gonna have them give 110%. But at the end of the day, it just is what it is.
You know what? On that note, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We're gonna do some this or that. Jed, he knows all about this. I got him the this or that sounder set up, so it's not like early on when we just had that 24-second clip, Briscoe. We got the full 3.5-minute one, pal.
I can't wait. I love this segment. You know that.
The home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City.
ESPN. Offices of DePasquale Moore. If you or a loved one has been hurt in a car wreck, remember, Mike's got this. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Come on. Welcome back to the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Josh Brisker joining us right now for This or That. Let's go. Celtics or Warriors tonight?
Celtics?
Does Jed listen to Fish or Wilco tonight with his cats?
Fish.
What do you think? Jed?
I will be listening to Fish, definitely, in about, let's see here, about 5 minutes at the pool.
Oh, hell. he's even wearing a Fish shirt right now. That's a bad question. I did it before I saw the shirt.
I'll even listen to some Wilco, though. I'm all good with it.
How many Busch Lights do I crush at softball tonight?
13.
3.5.
13?
What? Just say 13?
Yeah, my gosh.
I think you're a quitter. Close. I think you're going to have 3 and then quit halfway through the next one.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Who has the most receiving yards for the Chiefs next year?
Travis Kelce.
Wide receivers. Sorry, I should have
I don't know. That's a good question. No, it's not Travis Kelce.
Yeah, okay. Wide receivers.
Sky Moore.
Juju. Yeah, also, Jed should just get to play this game also.
Jed, you're in here.
This is a good evolution.
Kid Cudi or Kid Ink?
Kid Cudi.
Cudi.
Okay, yeah, same. I couldn't think of another kid. Kid Rock, I guess, you could throw in there.
Yeah,
Kid
Cudi. Cudi.
That was more of a landslide.
I would rather have a kid than Kid Rock.
Well, I will say Ball with a Ball still slaps. Does Leo Chanel play some edge next year?
No.
No.
He'll blitz plenty, but he's not gonna play edge.
Okay. How long do I go until I shave off the stash?
40 years.
2 weeks.
I don't know. Both seem very generous. Which Top Gun movie was better? Briscoe, I think you saw both, didn't you?
I have seen both. I enjoyed Maverick more.
Is it the new one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Haven't seen the new one.
You haven't seen the new one either. Yeah. Original for me, too, because I haven't seen the new one. Who wins the NBA Finals?
Well, if I think the Celtics are winning tonight, definitely win the whole thing. It's a must-win game tonight for the Warriors. I don't know if anyone's saying that, but I'll say Celtics.
I'm going Warriors. I'm going to be a contrarian. Do we still call Rudy this weekend just to annoy him while he's on vacation? I feel like we just need to call him just sometime and be like, hey, bud, how's it going?
No.
Why? You don't do that?
No.
Oh, okay.
So I don't... Do I annoy people on purpose? No, I annoy people on accident plenty. I don't need to do it on purpose.
Briscoe, you need to, though, because you know Rudy's just up in New York going, hey, guys, what's going on?
Hey,
how's it going?
Hey, Rudy, how you doing in New York?
I don't know, man. Much. Pretty tired.
Right. Pretty tired is a good...
yawn.
It's the yawn with an energy drink in his hand going, I don't know, pretty tired.
Yeah, I'm busy.
Who starts at right tackle week one for the Chiefs?
Andrew Wiley.
Jed?
Andrew Wiley, I guess.
Let's go Niang. He's going to be healthy, baby.
No, that would be my third one. I like Niang. I just don't think he's going
to
be ready.
Does Dayton Moore make it the rest of the year?
Yes.
Does Mike Matheny make it the rest of the year?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Does Cal Eldred make it the rest of the year?
Yes.
No.
Putt-putt or bowling?
Ooh, putt-putt, but I like them both. I'm not good at bowling, though.
Do the Bengals make the playoffs next year?
Yes.
Yeah, but they're not going to win the division.
No. How many teams in the AFC West make the playoffs next year?
Two.
Have you ever been in a fight?
Not a real one, no.
No. I'll tell you a good fight story off the air, though.
Better tight end all time, Tony G or Travis Kelce?
Kelce.
I'll say Kelce, yeah.
Tony G. Thank you, Briscoe. This was the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We'll be back live in studio on Monday. Jed, this is Sterling. We are out.